In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So, welcome to The Leadership Enigma, and delighted that I'm with Graham Codrington today, who is a futurist, scenario planner, specialist in looking at disruption and the future of work. But Graham, you've got 5 degrees and 5 best-selling books, so I'm feeling a little bit inferior now, actually, but welcome to the show.
don't at all, Adam. That 5 degrees I don't tell to too many people, too, because to be honest, I basically wanted to do a whole lot of research early on in my career.
Yep.
And I looked around for universities that would give me a piece of paper at the end of it. I really wasn't trying to be a nerd. It's more about stuff I wanted to learn and was hoping that somebody would give me credit for it anyway.
Well, do you know what? That's probably the reason for me doing the Leadership Enigma, because I learn every time I do one of these episodes. But let's start.
Adam, I will send you a certificate. How's that? Then you can have a certificate in podcasting.
It doesn't get any better than that, does it? My work is done, and that's it. I can hang up my microphone and headphones. But let's start with a simple question, but it might be a complicated answer. What is a futurist?
Oh, well, that's a good question. And, I've often had fun, not this year in 2020, but I've often had fun getting to an airport that requires you to fill out an arrival form. Of course, they always ask about profession. I could make my life easy and just put strategy consultant or scenario planner or something that people understand. But I love putting down futurist or futurologist. And, you always get the question, you know, if somebody's concentrating, the customs guard will ask me, you know, what is the score going to be tomorrow in Liverpool versus whoever, you know? And actually, Adam, one day I just decided, I was a long haul flight. I was really sick of that type of question. So I forget the exact game, but a person asked me what's going to be the score in the game tomorrow. And I gave them some random score. I said, it'll be 3-3 with a late equalizer in extra time, you know, and Liverpool will win on penalties. And I just like random. And he looked at me like, you're an idiot. And I kind of looked back at him, well, you asked a stupid question, right? So that's the answer, because clearly I can't predict the future. Anyway, the point of this story is, you know, I'd been fairly specific in my prediction. So I just checked the score the following day. I was spot on. I mean, you know, completely randomly, and this happens every now and again. I do console myself with the fact that there is some customs guard somewhere in the world desperately trying to remember my name and track me down so that he can get next year's stock picks and thinking I'm a genius. Look, if I could do that, I wouldn't have flown into a commercial airport. I would own a small country and a whole fleet of private jets. A futurist doesn't predict the future. I mean, clearly everybody knows that. What is it? What I do is I try and anticipate disruptive change and help my clients to prepare for as much of the future as we can anticipate. I help them to see and understand the meaning and implications of change. So it's more actually, I read a lot more history textbooks than I read science fiction. And I am doing a lot more helping my clients to make sense of what's happening rather than to try and predict it. And that's what I do.
So I'm crossing off the ask Graham for the lottery numbers. That's gone now. Then we don't need that. But that whole piece about sense making is something that keeps coming up. That ability for leaders to see the weak signals, understand by some means what's coming over the horizon, opportunity or challenge or both.
Yeah.
And so we're going to look at that, and we're going to come into the theme of adaptability. But I want to start with something that you and I were chatting about just before we went live, and that was, social media plays a massive part in who we are, what we do, maybe the information that we get, how polarized we are globally. If But I know you have a view on that, and I'd love you to share that because I think it's useful context.
Yeah, sure. You know, my radar is always switched on. So I'm always looking for, as you said, those weak signals. What can I learn? And not just about technology trends. A lot of people think that's the job, right? If you're trying, and not just of a futurist, of any leader in any business, your job is to try and see the forces that will shape your industry. And most people default to looking at driverless cars and 3D printers and, you know, all the rest, and they default to technology. But what I think is even more important is social value shifts. Because ultimately, technology, everybody can see coming. But if society is not ready for a technology, that technology might have no impact. I mean, right now, as we record this, we're right on the cusp of potentially getting vaccines for COVID. Yep. Now, it doesn't matter if the technology of the COVID vaccine works or not. Vaccines don't save lives. Vaccinations save lives.
Very true.
We can manufacture all the vaccines we like. If people don't want to get vaccinated, doesn't matter. And so it's less important whether we have a vaccine in 2021 and much more important whether enough people will get vaccinated.
Right.
And I'm much more concerned about that. So I'm not following whether AstraZeneca or Pfizer or Moderna or any of the others have got vaccines. I'm following the little Facebook thing that pops up every now and again and says, will you get vaccinated, yes or no? And horrified that in every time I see it, the majority of people are saying no. And so then you ask, well, why not? And, you know, about 20% of them are saying because Bill Gates has put a QR code microchip tracker in it. You know, that's going to, I don't know even what it's going to do for me. My life is certainly not interesting enough to be tracked by Bill Gates. I'm sure if he tracked me for 3 days, he'd give up on it and switch the QR code off. You know, but I mean, it's nonsense stuff. So 20% of people is just complete and utter tinfoil hat nonsense. Then about 20% of people say it's got something to do with some massive global conspiracy theory, which they can't really explain, but it all sounds very scary. Mm-hmm. And then about 20% of people say, well, you know, remember thalidomide, the vaccine that caused massive harm to kids in the 1960s. Now, I happen to have a good friend who was influenced by the thalidomide thing, and it wasn't a vaccine, and it wasn't what people say it is. And, you know, it was dealt with, and it's also 50 years ago, and we've kind of moved on from there. And then about 20% of people are saying, well, I'm going to wait and see. At least I understand that attitude.
Be the 20% first follower.
Just a case of saying, well, I don't necessarily want to be the first person on the block, but, you know, give it a month or two. We'll see if there are any side effects, and then we'll go for it. And 20% of people are saying, let's line up for it. Now, right there is everything you need to know about social media, because that's what the world population is, except it's got nothing to do with social media. I bet you if we were back in the 1600s and all we had was the very first printed pamphlets, you know, off of a printing press, we'd probably have that same spread of views. All social media has done is made it easier for everybody to just have their voice heard. It's not that the voices are new, and it's not that social media is the problem. And so for me, this is part of my job, is trying to work out, what does this mean? What is the technology enabling? What are the social values that are underlying it? What are people thinking? How do we then discern that thinking? And if you want to go a step further, how do we influence it as well? Hopefully influence it in the correct positive way that we influence people towards a better future, rather than sort of some nefarious kind of evil genius influence.
So Graham, let me ask you a question, because this is a really good example about vaccine and vaccination. Is a lot of what you do about human behavior?
Almost all of it is. So, right. You know, in and amongst the 5 degrees, my first degree was a BCom. I started life as a chartered accountant at KPMG, but then very soon realized that wasn't my interest. I was never auditor of the year, not interested in the numbers. I was way more interested in the people. Okay. So, you know, auditors are looking for fraud, and you can find fraud in some of the systems and the processes, and you can identify fraud through the numbers. I was always way more interested in why. Why did some people commit fraud? What's the psychology behind it? I should have gone back to varsity and done a psychology degree. I ended up doing sociology. Also did a bit of theology, as it happens.
You would have enjoyed criminology as well, by the sound of it.
Exactly. So there's a whole lot of stuff in there that's really fascinating to me about why people do what they do. My wife has often asked, "What does your husband do for a living?" And she explains it, and she says, "Well, he tries to track trends. He tries to work out not what's happening, but why things happen. So when we're at a dinner party," this is my wife explains this. She says, "At a dinner party, it's a whole group of guys standing in the corner chatting, and a really good looking woman walks into the room. Most of the guys look across and look at the good looking woman. My husband looks at the other men to try and work out why they did that." Now, I don't know if that's a good or a bad explanation. I don't know what to take out of that explanation, but she's not wrong. I try and work out what causes behavior rather than just being part of the behavior as it happens.
Gotcha. So let's move on to the real theme of this episode, because, you know, I sometimes say to people, with change being such a constant, today might be as simple as it gets. And again, we were chatting earlier, and we want to talk about this issue of adaptability and how does someone build in adaptability to their, and perhaps their organization's DNA? Because you've got a view, haven't you, that adaptability really is an integral factor to get over some of this bonkers change that we're seeing all the time.
Yeah. So, you know, Adam, for the last 20 years, I've spent most of my time working with senior leadership groups in companies in every industry all around the world. I've worked in this year, if it hadn't been for COVID, I would have ticked over the 100 mark. I would have got my century of countries that I've worked in.
Wow.
So I think I'm stuck on 98 at the moment. If this was a cricket match, I'd be sweating, you know.
2021, Graham. 2021.
98, not out. So I've worked across industries. I don't sort of specialize in any particular industry or any particular geography. Mm-hmm. And most of the work I've done for the last 20 years has been trying to convince these companies, these senior leaders, that they are in fact living in a moment of deep disruption.
Yes.
And so, you know, 50% of the time I've spent with senior leaders has been giving them examples and case studies. And yes, I have used the Uber, the Netflix, the Airbnb examples. I've tried to go further than that because those became cliches very quickly, but they still, I mean, just because they obvious examples doesn't mean we should use them. But I've, you know, you've tried to say to people that could happen to you. And everybody sort of looked at you politely and nodded. And I think I've done a fairly good job. And some of my clients have listened to me and said, okay, so if you're right, what do we do? And then if they ask that question and they allow me to then sort of go to the second phase of engagement, the second phase then is, well, you've got to become more adaptable. Because if I'm right and deep disruptive change, so structural change in your industry is what we're about. It's not just a surface level change. It's not just somebody coming in and doing what you've done, but faster, or doing what you've been doing, but cheaper, or doing what you've been doing, but with, you know, a little bit more technology savvy. It's somebody coming in and literally changing the rules to the game. Turning your industry on its head, destroying industry best practice.
Can you give me an example?
Well, who's Uber, Airbnb, Netflix, blah blah blah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, we can give you other examples in other industries. Let me give you future examples.
Yeah.
So I think that right now, SpaceX and Tesla are not working on building a moon, you know, a Mars base or a moon base. Elon Musk is not going to make his money out of doing a slightly better job than NASA of getting satellites into space. He's doing all of that in order to build the technology to get you and me, Adam, to be able to go from London to Singapore in 32 minutes, to go from Johannesburg to Los Angeles in 47 minutes.
Right.
Because all of the technology that you need to be able to do that currently exists.
Okay.
You will be able to get onto a rocket that has reusable rocket engines that puts you into low orbit, 27,000 miles per hour, fling you across the planet, then land successfully on the other side, not in a splashdown in the middle of the ocean, but land the rocket, and you all just step out of the rocket, and you used an iPad as a steering wheel, and normal human beings with not much training can do it. Now, all of that technology exists. That is what SpaceX is. Now, imagine what somebody will pay for this. If he can prove this technology over the period of the next 2 or 3 years, that he can do this over and over and over again, never having a single problem, never having anything go wrong. Or if something goes wrong, they fix it easily and they say, there we go, you know, minor blip, we sorted it out. He is going to be able to charge a lot of people really good money for that amount of speed around the planet.
Can you imagine?
And, you know, so that's an example of somebody who is thinking 10 steps ahead of us, but he's going to bring some technology into our world that is going to turn it upside down. The last guy who did this in a big way was Steve Jobs, when he stood up and he held up a piece of glass and he said, this is the future of the phone. And everybody looked at him. Do you know, Adam, the first question that was asked at that press conference when the phone, the iPhone was announced, the first three questions that journalists asked, first question was, where is the keyboard? And right. Steve's answer to the journalist was, it will be there when you need it. Mind blown. Everyone was saying, well, what do you mean? A keyboard is a binary thing. It's either there or it isn't. And he said, no, it's a virtual keyboard. If you need it, there's a keyboard there. If you don't need it, the screen clears and you can use the whole of the screen for other things.
Right.
Second question was, what are you, a computer company, doing making phones? Computers and phones are two completely separate things. Why is Apple going into phones? Again, just people completely not understanding what this guy was doing. And the fact that these are not two separate industries, these are one industry. Mm-hmm. And then the third question was, are you crazy? And that's always the question that is asked of people who bring proper institutional innovation. And I think this is the real innovation of the 2020s. It's not minor improvements to the products and services that you offer and the features that you offer. It's not finding new markets or new channels to market. Yes, you can call those innovation if you like, and you can pursue those, and you'll get your 8% growth per year, and your shareholders will be vaguely happy with you. But I think that the real innovation, that really what the 2020s holds out for those people who want double-digit, triple-digit growth, is the innovation of your business model, is the innovation of your industry rules for success and failure. Now, that's what I've been trying to get people to understand for the last 20 years. The gift that 2020 has been, the gift that COVID is to tell people they don't need the first half of the conversation with me. They now understand what deep disruptive change looks like and feels like, and they understand what it means now to be thrown into disruption when you're not ready for it, when you think you can't handle it, and then you discover, actually, we can, right? So if I told everybody at the beginning of 2020 what the year would look like with lockdown and disruption and work from home and everything else, 90% of my clients would have said, impossible, can't be done, this is going to be a disaster. Yet here we are, you and I recording this at the end of 2020, and it has been rough, it's been tough, there have been some industries that for no fault of their own have just been decimated. You know, who would have wanted to be an airline or in hospitality or entertainment this last year?
Right.
But a hell of a lot of my clients in other industries have done remarkably better than they would have imagined they could. And some of them have had their best year ever.
Winners and losers all the time. There's winners and losers, right?
Yeah. And the ones that have really succeeded have either been lucky to be in the right industry at the right time. I mean, you know, great time to be launching a home delivery e-commerce website this year, you know, for example. Great time to be in telecoms. You've had to be really stupid to not make money out of data and telecoms and fiber this year. But some have done it despite what they would have thought. And here's why. And this is the point.
Okay.
They are adaptable. They have adaptive DNA in their systems. So they are not looking at their world and saying, when can we get back to normal? How quickly can we get back to the plans that we had in place for this year? They're not doing what a lot of people are doing right now and looking ahead at 2021 and saying, right, everybody, 2020 was a hell of a thing, wasn't it? But let's get back to our plans. If we can just get back to our 2019 goals in 2021, then the shareholders will be happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you've heard that. I've heard that from way too many of my clients.
Of course. It's a common route.
Yeah. But they are going to find themselves in a world of pain. If I understand if somebody's saying, look, our 2019 numbers, our 2019 activity is where we want to get back to. I can kind of understand that, but there's so much danger in that language because the setting in your brain is, I want to be doing in 2021 what we planned to do in 2019.
Right, that's a good point.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. We are, COVID is not just a blip in history that you can grit your teeth, get through it, it'll be over. You know, we get a vaccine or whatever it is, and then it's over, and then we get back to the world as we know it. Honestly, it's not going to happen. And so what we need to be doing in 2021, your most important strategy for 2021 mm-hmm. is your structure. Your structure should be your strategy for 2021. More. Yeah, okay. So what I mean by that is you've got to take COVID as a gift. And that might be a bit of a big word.
I know what you mean though, but it's almost that ability to reset, isn't it? Reset your thinking.
And obviously I don't want to downplay people who have had personal tragedies, you know, people who have lost loved ones through COVID. I'm not being flippant about a really, really serious issue. So maybe invitation is a better word than gift there. But what COVID is, it's an invitation to embrace disruption. So instead of gritting your teeth and surviving it, instead of waiting for it to finish and then getting back to what you were doing before it started,
yes.
Why don't you say, hey, this is what disruption feels like. Don't have a choice. I've got the best excuse I've ever been handed to say to my shareholders or to say to my boss, you know why things are crazy at the moment? It's one word. It's a one-word answer to your question. It's COVID. So give me a gap. I'm going to try a whole lot of stuff I've never tried before. I'm going to do things we wouldn't have thought possible. I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to experiment more. I'm going to try stuff. All the stuff that clever, bold, innovative maniacs a year ago might have been wanting to try, but just never got told they were allowed to. Always told, no, don't be crazy.
This is their window of opportunity.
This is it. Exactly. What else are you waiting for? When next in your career, in your life, are you ever going to have the blankest of blank pages you've got now? When next are you ever going to have an excuse like you've got now? And what I'm hoping to do is to stop them being completely maverick and just going crazy and messing up and saying the thing you should be focusing all of this experimental energy on is how do you build adaptability into the very DNA of your system.
Right.
And if you can get that right, you will set yourself up not just to survive whatever's left of COVID, but you will survive the rest of the 2020s. You will survive artificial intelligence, robotic automation, predictive data analytics. You will survive climate change and sustainability issues. You will survive geopolitical unrest. You will survive Brexit because we're still going to be dealing with Brexit in 2030. God.
Tell me about it.
So you will survive that. You will survive when Donald Trump becomes president again in 2024. Oh, you will survive living on Mars. Okay, now I'm getting a little bit stupid. But you know what I mean. Whatever comes your way, you will be able to survive it. So why not take this COVID disruption as the ultimate invitation to build adaptability into your system once and for all.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions. One is, in a minute, I'm going to say, how can people contact you if they want to know more about this? Because I appreciate we only scraping the tip of the iceberg. But with all of these things, I think sometimes leaders and organizations look at the issue of adaptive change, transformational change, and sometimes I hear, where do I start? So what would be maybe the best advice to just get them going? Because it's about doing rather than thinking.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great question. So let me give you three places to start.
Great.
So the first place would be experiment more. We've got to build a culture of experimentation. Now, some people get experimentation wrong. I'm not talking about big business projects. I'm not talking about a new product. I'm not talking about a new market to open. That's right. That's not an experiment. That's a business project that needs due diligence, proper care. I'm talking about building a culture where people in your business are encouraged, are required to ask, what if, why not? You know, where you talk about your frustrations as a team, and then you say, well, what experiment could we try? Doesn't cost us any money. Doesn't even need really permission. If it doesn't work, it won't break anything, but you're building a muscle. You're building with little tiny experiments. How do we run our meetings better? How do we use email more effectively? Could we use WhatsApp internally?
Learning all the way.
Well, that's it. There's no failures in these, because all you're doing is asking a question. You're trying something. If it doesn't work, you say, oh, well, okay, we learned that we shouldn't do it that way. So there's no failures in the system. That's what I'd encourage people to do. Don't think business experiment now needs a big project. It's 3 to 6 months. It needs a budget and all the rest. Build into your team the desire even to just try stuff and give them permission, and give them, if you're the leader of the team, give them a safety net to say, I've got your back. You know, if you try it and it doesn't work, I've got your back. So
that's number
culture
one.
Of experimentation.
Gotcha. All right.
The second thing that you could do is distribute decision-making. What I mean by this is we've got systems in our businesses where the people that have got responsibility to do something very often don't have the authority to get it done. So COVID, right? Salespeople are told by their teams, go out to all your clients, speak to your clients. We've got to keep our clients on board. Find out what they need. Let's be responsive. Excellent. The customer relationship managers, the business development managers, the salespeople, whatever then labels are in your business, they rush off, they get the information. Speak to the clients. Do you need more products faster? Do you need fewer products slower? Do you need pricing conversations? What do you need? What do you need? We gather all the information. Now, the problem is this. Information is now held by the frontline people, by the salespeople. But information in traditional organizations, information flows upwards to where the authority is. So these salespeople can't now renegotiate the T's and C's. They've got to go to the sales manager, who goes to the sales executive, who has to get legal and compliance involved just to double check things.
Not the lawyers.
Changing the terms, of course the lawyers. Then marketing wants to get involved because you've got to put the new contract on the right letterhead, and we changed our Pantone color last week, so don't get that wrong, please, et cetera, et cetera. So finally, then the salesperson gets given an updated contract. It's a few days late and probably not got all the conditions the client wants, but hey, what can you do? That's the system. That's not going to work if you want adaptive, responsive, flexible, agile, resilient organizations. That works at McDonald's. That works when the outcome of every action needs to be precisely and identically the same every time. So if you work in an environment where you want everything to always be done exactly the same as it's always been done, okay, well then ignore me. You don't need to be adaptive. But if you're in an environment where you actually need responsiveness, agile, flexible, whatever, you know, these are the words we throw around all the time.
They are, yep.
I prefer the word adaptive, but they're all probably interchangeable. Then what do you need? You need to let the authority flow to where the information is. So in the traditional organization, information flows to where the authority is, and you've got to wait for the authorities to make the decision. We've got to find ways to give authority to the people with the information, people on the front line, and make sure that authority and responsibility are more closely aligned. Now, that's not something you can do by next Friday. I mean, this is a project, right? So that's what I meant by your structure needs to be your strategy in 2021. This is going to take you a few months to get this right, and you've got to develop people's skills. You've got to change systems and processes. You might have to put new technology systems in place for measuring. So this is not a small thing I'm talking about, yeah, but it is the thing. And it is, in fact, in my opinion, the main thing that you need to be doing, which right. needs to the third thing I'm suggesting.
Yes.
And that is honestly to leaders. This is a big one. So maybe this is not quite on the list of where can you start practical, but it's honestly a mindset shift. You as a leader might have surprised yourself as you look back over lockdown. You might never have thought of yourself as a micromanager. But as soon as your team was all working from home and you couldn't connect with them day by day in the office, you might have got a little bit concerned, upset, agitated by the fact that you had no idea how many hours your team was actually working. There's a big sign that you're not an adaptive leader,
right?
That you're more of a controlling leader because you were worried about inputs rather than outputs. You've got to change your mindset as a manager, as a leader, to say, I honestly couldn't care about where my people work, what they're wearing, when they work, how many hours they work. Surely your concern is outputs. Are your people delivering what they need to deliver to the quality they need it to be delivered in the timing that is required? Everything else doesn't matter. If your people can deliver what is required of them, you've done your job as their leader. And if you think that the way you get that to happen is by measuring hours and what they look like on camera and whether they're at their keyboard by 9 o'clock in the morning, you fundamentally misunderstood adaptability, flexibility, agility. And good luck for the rest of the 2020s, because I think it's going to be hell for you.
Well, that was definitely one of my best questions, Graham, because I'm feverishly writing here as I'm learning as well in relation to that three-point plan. So that brings me to my question. This is fascinating stuff. It really is. And I'm so glad that you and I have connected. You know, we've known each other for some time now, but how can people contact you, get in touch with you to continue this journey and find out more?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Two ways. You can go via my company, which is tomorrowtodayglobal.com. So all one word, tomorrowtodayglobal.com. That's the place to find us, and you'll see our whole team and what we can do. For me personally, just look up Graham Codrington. Graham is spelt the Scottish way, if you know the difference. So that's G-R-A-E-M-E. I'm sure it's in the show notes of the podcast, so people
will
look it up. But GrahamCodrington.com is the place to go. Or look me up on any of the socials. I use Facebook for more personal stuff, and I rant about sport a hell of a lot. So maybe ignore Facebook for business purposes. But LinkedIn, YouTube is a really good place to go. My team helps me to put out two or three videos a week. They're 2 or 3 minutes long. Just give you a little thought bullet, get you thinking in the space. It does take some of our forecasting, some of our scenarios, and then does quite a lot on unpacking this adaptability stuff. So there's a nice archive on the YouTube channel. That's probably a good place to go.
No, that's great. I've seen some of your videos on LinkedIn, so I recommend people go to that YouTube channel and check it out. I'm going to finish with a bit of a fun question, actually, and this is fun, especially as you're the futurist, and I'm going to ask you to go backwards. What would be your best advice to a 21-year-old Graham?
It is a fascinating question. It's difficult. So I'm battling to answer because, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant or anything, but I've loved every minute of my life. What I might say to myself 21 years ago is just keep a better journal of what you do in life. I've had a remarkable life. I've traveled, as I say, to nearly 100 countries.
98, not out.
That's it. I got married young. I've got three amazing kids still married to my first wife. She doesn't like it when I introduce her as, "Hi, this is Jane, my first wife." but it's the truth. You know, and what I do for a living, I was really, blessed is, I don't know if that's the right word, to find what I'm good at early in my life and, you know, before the end of my 20s. And people pay me to basically do my hobby. So, you know, anyway, sorry, that's a little bit self-indulgent answer. So I would probably tell myself to journal more. What I might tell somebody of my age half a lifetime ago or more is get ready for the ride of your life. Because I think that even though this is what I do for a living, and even though for as long as I can ever remember, I've always had my head in the future, kind of loved change. And that's by personality, that's who I am. I don't think any of us 30 years ago could have ever imagined what would be unlocked by computing, the internet. You know, 21 years ago, we were just getting our first email addresses. We were hearing that log on of the internet.
I remember it. Wow.
What is that? We were getting our first Windows computers and saying, what is this mouse thing and what's this interchange? We were connecting ourselves. We were starting the news, the 24-hour news channels, and cable TV was starting, and the world was becoming a smaller place. And I think we kind of had a hint. We kind of knew what was coming. We kind of knew we were moving into this computer age, this digital age. But to look back at where we come, you know, I think we overestimate what we can do in like 2 or 3 years, but we underestimate what we can do in 10 or 15 years.
Right.
And I just think I would have told myself to not buckle up, because I don't want to be safe and protected from this wild ride. I want to just enjoy it more. Get to the front of the roller coaster, Graham, because you want to see this thing unfolding. Yeah, I might have given myself a few company names like Apple, Microsoft, Tesla, and so on, and just said, buy a few of those stocks.
Oh, yeah, hindsight is a wonderful thing. It really is. Listen, Graham, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And I'm going to take you up on that offer for coming back onto the Leadership Enigma in a few months, because I know you're going to write another book, aren't you?
I'm busy working on a book at the moment. I'm nearly finished one that's mainly just about this whole, I call it reimagining, and it'll sort of unpack what we've been talking about here. But the real one I'm working on, which is taking a little bit longer because I think it's more important. The working title is Rethink, because I do think we've got to think about how we make sense of facts and how we make sense of what's right and what's wrong and how we know what we know. So I think there's a bit of philosophy in it. I think there's, I think it needs to, it's still percolating in me. So six okay. months, maybe if it takes me longer, a year, but look out for it, because we've got to work out how to think clearly in this world. Otherwise we're all in trouble.
Well, we've heard it here first. That's swizzing around your head as we chat. So we'll have you back when you're good and ready to talk about that particular subject.
Perfect. I'll accept the invitation as soon as I got something to say. Thanks,
Daddy. Graham, you're a star. Thanks very much.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.